All right, good morning, everyone. So while the sheets are coming around, I want to go a little bit out of order. Emir Tashem, for the next 2 weeks or so. So this week and next week, being that we're leading up to Hanukkah, and Emir Tashem next week Hanukkah, I'd like to utilize our time to be able to focus on different themes of Hanukkah. And specifically this week, I want to go back to Kapitel Lamed, chapter 30 in Tehillim. And although we've done this chapter before, we've actually done it a couple of times throughout the years, I want to go back and focus on it a little bit more. The sheets are coming around. There are actually two sheets. There's one stapled sheet, and then one additional sheet. I apologize, it was a late-breaking edition this morning that did not get included in the packet. And with that, we'll continue. We dedicate our learning. This year is dedicated by the Gross family in the Le'ilui Nishmas Chana Ruvain ben Moshe Aaron and Shalom Yeshayah Zichron Levracha ben Rabbi Yitzchak Mordechai Fishel. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Neshamas will have an Aliyah and the family in Nechama. And of course, we dedicate our learning as a zuchus refuah shalema for Mrs. Tammy Maskowitz, for Tamar Adina Baskina Shulamis, who is in significant need of our tefillos and our Talmud Torah. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, she will have a complete and enduring refuah. So let's begin. Number one, Kapitel Lamed, chapter 30. Mizmor Shir Chanukas Habayis LeDavid. So remember, again, David HaMelech writes this particular kapitel, and he says, a psalm, a song of dedication of the house of David. Aromimcha Hashem ki dilisani, velo simachto oivai li. I will exalt you, O Lord, for you have raised me up, and you have not allowed my enemies to rejoice over me. Hashem Elokai, Hashem, my God, shivati elecha vatir po'ini. I've cried out to you, you have healed me. Hashem ha'elisa min sha'ol nafshich yisani mi. Our Lord, you have brought my soul from the grave. You have revived me from my descent into the pit. Zamru l'Hashem chasidav odula zecher kodesho. Sing to the Lord His pious ones and give thanks to His holy name. Kirega biapo chaim birtzono. For his wrath lasts but a moment, life results from his favor. In the evening, weeping may tarry, but in the morning there is joyful singing. I said in my tranquility, I will never falter. If you skip down, David HaMelech says, Hafachta mispadila macholi, pitachta sakiva ta'azreni simcha. Pasuk Yud Beis, verse 12. You have turned my lament into dancing for me. You loosened my sackcloth and girded me with joy. Leman izamercha kavod velo yidom. Hashem Elokai li olam odeko. So that my soul will sing praises to you and not be silent, O Lord. My God, I will thank you forever. So what the reason why I'm choosing to focus on this particular kapitel is because obviously it's important. How do we know it's important? We know it's important because it's built into daily tefillah. Anything that by definition is part of daily prayer, by definition means that it conveys a meaning, it conveys a message that is absolutely necessary for everyday life. But that's not the reason I'm focusing on it today. The reason we're focusing on it today is because there's a beautiful custom that over the days of Hanukkah, we go ahead and we recite this chapter of Tehillim twice. Not only do we go ahead and say it as part of, or say as the introductory paragraph to Psukei Dezimra, but in fact the custom is that we recite it again at the conclusion of davening. Why? What's the nature of, why do we say this a second time? What does that have to do with Hanukkah? So presumably, the connection to Hanukkah is the opening line of the kapitel. Mizmor Shir Chanukas Habayis LeDavid. This was a song that was sung at the dedication of the Beis HaMikdash, as written and as composed by King David. Since on Hanukkah, we celebrate the rededication of the Second Temple. Remember again, so we celebrate the fact that the Maccabim, the Hashmonaim, were able to beat back the Syrian Greeks, re-enter into the Beis HaMikdash, rededicate the Beis HaMikdash for national use. Therefore, we say this kapitel. That's the connection. So I'd like to try to focus on this morning is a couple of things. Number one, the kapitel itself, the chapter itself, as we've spoken about in the past, is an incredible anomaly. Why is it an anomaly? Because when you go ahead and you look at this kapitel, although the opening phrase makes reference to the dedication of the Beis HaMikdash, we run into two major problems. Number one,
I
Good morning, everyone. Number one, right? King David did not build the temple. As we've spoken about so many times, King David was not alive at the time of the dedication of the Beis HaMikdash. So what exactly is this song that David HaMelech is singing about the dedication? That's issue number one, although that's easily resolvable, as we'll discuss. And issue number two is, what does this have to do with the Beis HaMikdash? Remember, again, even look at the rest of the theme. You could scan it quickly. I know we read it quickly. What's the theme of this capital? I'll give you a hint. The theme of this capital is pretty much the theme of most of Tehillim, which is, I'm in trouble. I'm in trouble. I need your help. You, God, came through for me. You know, part of the greatness of David HaMelech, and we've spoken about this many times throughout the years, David HaMelech was able to feel the salvation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu even before it came. This was Yageli Bibishua Secha. This was Va'ani Bechastecha Batachti. Ribbono Shel Olam, I am so confident in your salvation. I am so optimistic about your salvation that I feel it even before it has actually arrived. I feel it even before it has actualized. David HaMelech was the king of optimistic hope, was the individual who was able to rely on future realities, bring them back into his present. He was so confident about salvation that he was able to reach into the future, pull that salvation and bring it back into a difficult present. So the truth is, the theme of this capital, Daniel seems to be speaking about sickness, illness, which we discussed in the past. So I'm sick, I'm ill, I'm having difficulties, but I know that you're going to come through for me. And the obvious question then becomes, what does that have to do with the opening phrase? How is this discussion about sickness and salvation ultimately related to the Beis HaMikdash? So this is the twofold question we have. Let's take a look. And number two, and of course, the third question, which is our overarching question, which is, what is the relationship of this capital to Chanukah? So really three basic questions. Number one, how are we to understand King David writing a psalm for the dedication of the Beis HaMikdash when he himself did not experience that event? Number two, how does the rest of the psalm fit with the first line? The first line discusses a dedication to the Beis HaMikdash, but the rest of the chapter discusses nothing about the Beis HaMikdash. And question number three, what's the connection to Chanukah? Those are our three questions. So let's take a look at number two. So the Gemara says something amazing. So our first approach for this morning, which is not really related to Chanukah, just related to understanding the capital. So the Gemara says something amazing. The Gemara says, what is the meaning of David HaMelech's statement in chapter 86 in Tehillim, when David HaMelech says, God, perform for me a good sign, and let my enemies see, and let them be embarrassed. Amar David lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam, Machol li al oso avon. God, forgive me for that sin. What sin is he referring to? Bathsheba. Remember, we've spoken about this many times, which is that the event that most colored David HaMelech's life and colored his monarchy was the episode with Bathsheba. So we've spent many times throughout the years discussing this particular episode. We've discussed the idea that on a technical, legalistic level, David HaMelech did not commit an act of adultery because Bathsheba was retroactively divorced upon the death of her husband Uriah Hitti. Granted, that death occurs because David HaMelech sends him purposely to the front lines to be killed. But again, that's how the Gemara says, Kala Omer David Chata, Eino Ela Toa. Whoever says that King David sinned, meaning committed adultery, is mistaken. Talmud actually says it in a much stronger word. Kala Omer David Chata, whoever says King David committed adultery, Eino Chelik Lolam Haba, doesn't have a portion to the world to come. Meaning, God forbid to cast aspersions on King David. He made a mistake. The mistake wasn't adultery on a technical level. The mistake was absolutely a lapse in moral conduct. It was absolutely and unequivocally inappropriate and wrong. And we know that. We know that because there are three major repercussions from this event. The baby dies, right? The first baby that he conceived with Bathsheba dies. There's a rebellion of Avshalom. And the third one is either there was sickness or other issues that came about. In any event, David HaMelech and this Gemara is having a dramatic conversation with God. Now understand, David HaMelech also serves as the paradigm for tshuva. David HaMelech teaches us how to do tshuva. Because remember again, he makes a mistake. When confronted by the reality of that mistake, what does he do? He owns it. He owns it. One of the biggest reasons why we often fail to advance in life and fail to gain real traction after making mistakes is, you know, we live in a society of excuses. If someone does something wrong, the first thing we always look to figure out is what? Who the parents were, right? Like, what happened? You know, your parents clearly didn't love you enough, right? Or again, your second grade teacher didn't give you enough attention. It's amazing. You see this all of the time. That there's always an excuse mechanism. Someone does something wrong, they're oppressed. They're this, they're that. Judaism does not believe that. Now, Judaism absolutely believes the parents I had absolutely have an impact on who I am. But at the end of the day, a lot of people don't have good parents. And a lot of people don't have good upbringings. But that is no excuse for acting out. And that's no excuse for doing inappropriate things. At the end of the day, the buck of my life stops with me. I am responsible for what I do. I'm responsible, ultimately, again, for what occurs. The greatness of King David is that when he's confronted by Nathan HaNavi, you made a mistake, he owns it. He absolutely, unequivocally owns it. There's no excuses. There's no but. There's no this. I did it. I made a mistake. I'm owning it. Tell me what I need to do to repair it. That's why David HaMelech is a paradigm for the tshuva process. It says, Ribono shel Olam, machal yal osa avon. Forgive me for my sin. Amar lo, machal lecha. God says, you are forgiven. You are forgiven. That's the power of tshuva. Right, the power of tshuva is such as that if you're sincere, if ultimately again you own your mistakes, you're willing to go ahead and pick yourself back up this forgiveness. Amar lo, asei mi os b'chayai. So what does David HaMelech say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Ribono shel Olam, I appreciate that and thank you very much for forgiving me, but I need you to give me a demonstrable public sign of forgiveness. Remember, we learned this a few weeks ago. David HaMelech, when he walked into the Beis Medrash, right? It didn't matter what they were learning. The subject always switched to the laws of adultery. They taunted him. David HaMelech was taunted. And David HaMelech, by the way, this is just another aside. David HaMelech is a case study, is a textbook case of proper midos. You know, the Gemara says, sometimes the pinnacle of interpersonal accomplishment is to have the restraint not to respond when someone says something nasty to you. So then we know it's an incredible avoda not to respond, but that is the true test of a person's midos metal. When someone says something to you, do I have the ability to exercise restraint, or do I have like a verbal uncontrollable reflex to shoot back? David HaMelech exercised the ultimate restraint, but at the end of the day, every single day was taunted. Again, I want to point out, this was from his entire monarchy. It never stopped. Even when he was dead, they maligned his memory by saying he was an adulterer. That's, of course, in addition to the fact that people wanted to claim that he was not really fit for the monarchy to begin with, the grandson of Rus, the Moabite convert, all this different stuff. Someone says, Yom Shalom, I know you forgive me, but here's what I need. I need you to give me a public sign so that not only I know that you forgive me, but what? I need the people to know that you have forgiven me. So Amar lo, Bechayecha eini modia. God says no. Bon Shalom says no. I'm not going to give you a public sign in your lifetime, but Bechaye Shlomo bincha eini modia. I will give you a public sign during the lifetime of your son Shlomo. Now, why HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want to give David a public sign, we'll discuss. But he's not during your lifetime, but during your son's lifetime. So what happens? Kishabana Shlomo's Beis Medrash, a very moving Gemara. When Shlomo Melech built the Beis HaMikdash, Bikesh Lahachnis Aron LeBeis Kodesh HaKadoshim. He wanted to bring the Aron, wanted to bring the Ark of the Covenant into the Holy of Holies. Dovku Sha'arim Zabazak. Can you imagine this scene? The Beis HaMikdash was a major, it took years to build. Probably today, would be equivalent of millions upon millions of dollars to go ahead and build this Beis HaMikdash. The great day, the inauguration day, the ribbon cutting ceremony is here. And what happens? They're bringing in the Aron and only one small problem, which is the gates of the Beis HaMikdash will not open. The gates of the Beis HaMikdash will not open. So Shlomo Melech doesn't know what to do. He starts davening, but no matter what he davens, at the end of the day, the gates don't open. Skip down a little bit in the Gemara. The Gemara says, finally, he says, Kevan Sha'amar, Hashem Elokim, Al Toshif Penei Meshichecha, Zochro Lechasdei David Avdecha. When he brings up the memory of his father, when he says, God, please open these gates in the merit of David, your servant, Miad Na'aneh. He has answered, the gates open. what happens in that moment. Ba'osa Shah Nepchu Pnei Kolsoni Yisrael Kolsoni David Kishulei Kedera. That moment, David HaMelech's enemies, their faces became blackened like the bottom of the leaf. They turned ashen. They turned ashen. V'yedu kala'am v'chol Yisrael shemachol lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu al osa avon. And in that moment, again, years after David HaMelech has already passed away, that was the moment in which the general populace finally understood that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that God had in fact forgiven David HaMelech. Why is this important for us? Go to number three. Says the Radak, something quite amazing. He says, Mizmor Shir Chanukas Habayis LeDavid, Chibro David Shiomru BeChanukas Beis HaMikdash. King David, of course, knew, he was already told that he was not going to build the Beis HaMikdash. So what happens? Nevertheless, he composed this song to be sung by the Levitic choir at the day of the inauguration. Va'afa pi she'in bo zeh ha-mizmor zecher habayis, hiskir bo slichas pishav. So listen to how beautiful this is. Remember, our question was, the opening line of the capital tells us that it's a song of dedication to the Beis HaMikdash. Yet, the rest of the capital speaks about sickness, illness, healing, and salvation. What's the connection? Now says Radak, we understand. Three Aleph, middle of the first line. Even though this capital contains no real reference to the Beis HaMikdash, aside from its first line, Hiskir bo slichas pshav. It does contain a mention or a reference to the forgiveness of King David's sins. Shayu choshvim oivav, shelo tiskayim lo hamelucha ulezaro acharav, lo onesh osa avon. You see, people were convinced that as a result of the episode of Bathsheba, David HaMelech had not only compromised his own standing, but had forfeited the right to establish a dynastic monarchy. There is no way that God is going to allow him to be the father of a dynastic monarchy, and ultimately the messianic line. And even though he was told by the prophet, by Nosan HaNavi, that the son who would come after him would build the Beis HaMikdash, lo hayu ma'aminim sheyucha lihios ki ben sheyulad lo me'osa isha ye melech v'yivne beis hamikdash sheye makum slicha v'chaparas. This is amazing and a dramatic kind of footnote in the David HaMelech story. Remember again, David and Bathsheba, that union is blessed by God, which is an exceptionally strange dynamic given the fact about the way that it started. But nevertheless, that union is blessed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now that the Ribbono Shel Olam names Shlomo, Shlomo, right? He gives Shlomo his name. He tells David, Shlomo is going to build the Beis HaMikdash. Now remember, all of this happens between God and David, or God, David, Bathsheba, and Nosan HaNavi. No one else knows about this. Says the Radak, the general populace felt, there is no way that Shlomo is going to be king. There's no way. There's no way. How could it be that the offspring from this illicit union is going to be the continuation in the dynastic monarchy and is going to be the one who builds the Beis HaMikdash? After all, what is a Beis HaMikdash? What is the essence of a Beis HaMikdash? So we often think Kedusha is, that can't be it, because remember again, you could have Kedusha anywhere. It's a wonderful part about being Jewish. There are many, many wonderful perks. One of the greatest perks is you can access God whenever and wherever you want. You don't need an address, you don't even need a Beis HaMikdash. The essence of the Beis HaMikdash was that it was a place of slicha v'chapara. It was a place where there was a constant process for atonement that was underway. That's why, again, we say, ki beisi beis tefila yikari l'chol ha'amim. The Beis HaMikdash was not just important for Klal Yisrael. The Beis HaMikdash was important for humanity because it provided forgiveness, it provided absolution, it provided atonement for the entire, for all of humanity. That's what we lack with a Beis HaMikdash, a place or a process or a framework for complete atonement. So people said, how could it be that the child born of an illicit union is going to be the one who goes ahead and builds the Beis HaMikdash, which is to be the address ultimately for atonement? It's impossible. It can't be. This was the jet and this was the jet. Now, by the way, this helps to explain something very important. Skip down to paragraph Beis. Remember again, You know your Navi. So you know what happens when David HaMelech is on his deathbed, right? End of Shmuel Beis. What happens when he's on his deathbed? So one of David HaMelech's sons, a boy by the name of Adoniyo ben Chogis, decides to go ahead and declare himself as king. as king. Actually, it's Malachim Aleph. He declares himself as king. So what happens? Now, what's interesting is some of David's closest advisors go ahead and get upon. Now, I want to be clear. Adoniram ben Haggis was not launching a coup. He was not trying to overtake his father. David HaMelech is dying. He's dying. He is gasping his last breath. He's going to die imminently. Adoniram says, I am my father's son. I am the next in line to be king. Why does he garner such support? Because in the eyes of many, it was impossible to think that Shlomo was going to be king. How could Shlomo, the son of David and Bathsheba, in the eyes of many, this illicit union, how could this be the next king over the Jewish people? How could this be the man who was going to build the Beis HaMikdash? So when Adoniram ben Haggis goes ahead and says, I'm the next king, people say, okay. Right? Remember, David HaMelech never made any public proclamation that Shlomo was the heir. He never put out there that when I die, Shlomo was going to take my place. So in the absence of a public declaration from the king, Adoniram ben Haggis says, I'm the guy. People said, okay. Remember again, fast forward a little bit. Nathan and Bathsheba confront David on his deathbed and say, what's going on over here? You said Shlomo was going to be king. God said Shlomo was going to be king. Make the declaration. David HaMelech from his deathbed makes the declaration that Shlomo is going to be king. And again, that's the end of it. Everyone goes home. There's no civil war. Even Adoniram ben Haggis says, okay, if my father's... The story ends when David makes the proclamation. Says the Radak something amazing. Skip down in paragraph Beis. In paragraph Beis, the fourth line in. He says, Yadu be'emes, ki nimcha le'David, osa avon mechila gemura shlema. When Shlomo becomes king, the general populace understood that meant that God blessed the union of David and Bathsheba. There was a public display that the Ribono Shel Olam signed off on this marriage, and that this child was to be the next king. So watch this. Says Radak something absolutely amazing. David HaMelech wants one thing more than anything. He wants absolution. He wants forgiveness. Now, he knows he has it from God. He has it from God. But what he wants more than anything is for that public display so that the people will see that he is forgiven. The Ribono Shel Olam tells David, no, not during your lifetime. Why can't David get it during his lifetime? By the way, the Ribono Shel Olam is teaching us a very important lesson, which is patience. You know one of the first mitzvos that we were commanded when we go into Eretz Yisrael, one of the first mitzvos? Arla. Arla. The halacha of Arla is you can't eat fruit for the first 3 years after you plant the tree. Asks the Sfas Emes, why is that the first mitzvah that we get when we come into the land? To which the Sfas Emes explains, because Ribono Shel Olam is teaching us that the cornerstone for our national and individual identities has to be patience. The Ribono Shel Olam has a plan, and that plan often spans generations and centuries and millennia. The Ribono Shel Olam is because he's timeless. That plan actualizes in multiple different ways. If we live lives of instant gratification, that I need it here, I need it now, life is going to constantly be frustrating. But if we understand that I have to be a patient person, there's a plan, there's a chachma, there's a wisdom to everything. This is true as a people, this is true as individuals. I have to be patient. That's what Chesh Baruch was. You want forgiveness? Okay, I'm going to give you forgiveness, but not when you want it. I'm going to give it to you on my timeline, God says. Well, there's a plan. You have to learn the art of patience. But just as an aside, this is not a shir on patience. Not a shir, but if it were a shir on patience, I would say this is one of the greatest challenges, especially, again, raising children in this generation as well, because everything is instant. Right? Everything is WhatsApp. Everything is posting. Everything is instant. And on one hand, while it has many benefits to it, what it does is it erodes our ability to wait. It erodes our ability to say, I can't have the information, or I can't have whatever it is right now. And for those of us raising children in this particular climate, it's exceptionally important to instill that midah of patience. You want this? You can't have it yet. I'm not for the sake of being a mean person. But this concept of you can't, instant gratification is the antithesis of the Jew. Nothing happens for us instantly. And by the way, you don't have to take my word for it. We've been waiting for some major stuff for 2,000 plus years. Right? But understand, if we did not have the midah of patience, we would have given 2,000 years. Who waits for anything 2,000 years? You're kidding? We can't wait for most things more than 4 minutes. And if there's, I have to wait something for more than 4 minutes, then I need to get out of 4G and get up to 5G or 7G or 10G. We don't wait. We as a people, the only reason we're here is because of the midah of patience. The Baruch Hashem says, David HaMelech, you are forgiven. What you want, you cannot have yet. It'll come, but you can't have it yet. Therefore, says the Radak something absolutely amazing. David HaMelech says to his son Shlomo, Shlomo, when day that you dedicate the Beis HaMikdash, I want you to sing this song. Mizmor Shir Chanukah Sabayis LeDavid. What's the topic? Over the topic is about illness, sickness, salvation. What does it have to do with? David HaMelech is saying, I want you to understand, I spent my years of my life in a very turbulent state. Remember, David HaMelech was also afflicted with sickness for 6 months as a result of the episode with Bathsheba. One of the pieces of fallout. David HaMelech says, as a result of the episode with Bathsheba, I was a broken person. I was humiliated all of the time. I was derided all of the time. I had a very difficult life. Again, David HaMelech is not complaining. He owns what he did. This is a fallout of my actions. But even if I brought it upon myself, it's still exceptionally difficult. I've done my tshuva, yet I can't get any traction with the general populace. So the Kapitel speaks about being healed from illness. David HaMelech says, the only time I'm going to be healed from my illness, it's the illness of sin, is when you, my son, dedicate the Beis HaMikdash. Because when those gates only open, when you utter my name, when those gates will only open when you bring up my memory, the people will finally see that I have been forgiven. And on that day, I will finally be healed. I won't be here anymore. I'll have to be looking down on it from Shamayim. But at the end of the day, that's when I will finally be healed. Says Radak, that's the connection. This is the kapitel to be sung ultimately on the day of the dedication of the Beis HaMikdash. It talks about illness because it's only on that great day when the Beis HaMikdash is dedicated. David HaMelech's memory opens the doors that David HaMelech is finally healed from his lifelong illness, the fallout of the sin with Bathsheba. Take a look at number five. I'll skip a little bit. So Rav Hirsch has a beautiful insight here. So remember again, that first approach is kind of just, and this is shared by many, that first approach of the Radak is shared by many in terms of their insight to this kapitel. Nothing to do with Chanukah per se, but just sets the table for how to understand the kapitel. Take a look at number five. So Rav Hirsch has a beautiful insight over here. Rav Hirsch writes, he says, the contents of this psalm might present some difficulty with respect to the question of what the connection is between the rest of the psalm and its superscription. In other words, Mizmor Shir Chanukas HaBayis LeDavid sounds like it's going to speak about the Beis HaMikdash, yet the rest of the kapitel does not speak about the Beis HaMikdash. The balance of Psalm 30 does not contain even one word about the temple, much less of its construction and dedication. Instead, it would seem that we have here a description of a whole lifetime of experiences, attesting to the healing and deliverance, trials and bliss, which the Lord sends to those who devote themselves to Him in love. However, the reference here to the temple may perhaps be better understood if we examine the entire psalm more closely. Look what Rav Hirsch writes. Let us consider for a moment the nature and significance of the temple, the Jewish house of God, which is primarily intended to bring to mind the nearness of God on earth, the intimate relationship of God and man, the presence of the Lord in the midst of human endeavor, as well as the heavenward striving of man toward Him. The sanctuary of the Lord is nothing else but a concrete civil paragraph B of the truth that wherever all of man's spiritual and physical existence and thriving is devoted to attain God's favor, to the practical application of the law, then all of human life, both individual and communal, becomes a throne of Kruvim. God's invisible presence will seat itself upon this throne, turn the page, in order to benevolently protect, guide, and further all human striving on earth. I'll just read a few more lines, then we'll explain. A corroboration of this fact is found in the words which Israel was first commanded to build a sanctuary onto the Lord. Let us consider how the original thought of a house of God and the first dedication of a cornerstone for such a sanctuary emanated from the recognition of the intimate union between heaven and earth, and above all, from the protecting and benevolent presence of God. Let me just read three more lines, then we'll stop. This august presence reveals itself directly to man first and foremost in man's pure and humble endeavor in establishing his house on earth, so that pure abode of man might become a house of God, and thus a gate of entry to heaven upon earth. So if Hirsch explains, again, in English, if you skip down a little bit. Thus, David came, paragraph F, thus David came to designate this psalm in which he describes his experiences and which he reaffirms his trust in God to be the anthem to be sung in honor of the dedication of the house. What is, so Rav Hirsch says, we just said before, the point of the Beis HaMikdash is a place of atonement. Rav Hirsch looks at this a little bit differently. Rav Hirsch says, what is the point, ultimately again, of a house of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? What's the point of the Beis HaMikdash? It is to bring God into this earth. You know, the Beis HaMikdash, the Ramban, has this beautiful insight in Parshas Truma, where the Ramban explains that every part of the Mishkan, you talk about by the Mishkan, but ultimately it extends to the Beis HaMikdash as well, is to try to resemble a home. So for example, we have a shulchan, right? We have a shulchan. There's a shulchan in the base of Mithrash, in the Mishkan, a table upon which you put the lechem upon him. We have a shulchan in our home. There's a menorah, illumination. We have illumination in our home. The aron is supposed to look like a seat, a chair. We have chairs. Everything is supposed to represent a human abode. What's the goal? The goal of the Beis HaMikdash is to say, the same way that I bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kiviyachol into this home, the Beis HaMikdash, what's my goal in life? My goal in life is to bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu into my home. That is the goal of the Beis HaMikdash. The same way I could draw God down from the celestial sphere into this physical construct, this physical framework called the Beis HaMikdash, my job is then to see, once I can bring him into the Beis HaMikdash, I also have the ability to go ahead and bring him into my home. And this, by the way, is the true test of a person's spiritual construct. You know, remember, one's home is where one is able to most let their guard down, right? Often it's in our homes that we do things. You know, most people have two different personalities. You have your home personality and your outside personality, right? And for most people, those two personalities are not the same. Outside, I like to project a particular type of image, but inside, I let my proverbial hair down, right? Inside, I go ahead and I kind of act in a different way. Now, obviously, the Jew is not supposed to have that type of split personality. The goal is, whatever that important image that I have to project on the outside, that has to be the image I have to present in the inside. And even more than that, by the way, truth is, if we're honest, it's even more important to go ahead and make sure to project the right image in the house, more than even outside the house. There's an amazing Gemara, I forgot to put it on the sheet, but the Gemara says, this is Gemara Maseches Chagiga, Daf Tezayin 16a says, Avnei beso v'koros beso shal adam, hein mi'idin bo. After 120, it is the stones of my home and the beams of my home that come to give testimony about the life I lived and the person I was. In other words, at the end of the day, I'm not judged for my, what we call klapei chutz, for my external identity. I'm judged for my internal identity. It's the stones and walls and beams of my home that come to testify about the true person I was throughout my lifetime. Says Rav Hirsch something absolutely amazing. Says Rav Hirsch, the point of the Beis HaMikdash, that when I go to the Beis HaMikdash and I see that the great Ribono Shel Olam, the great amorphous, ambiguous, undefinable entity that we call HaKadosh Baruch Hu, comes and rests his presence in this home, I say to myself, if God can rest his presence in this home, the Beis HaMikdash, then what? He can rest his presence in my home as well. And then it becomes my God-given sacred duty to create a home that is capable to house and to ultimately retain the Shekhinah. That, at the end of the day, what I'm judged for after 120, says the Gemara, is did I build a home, did I build a life that was God-friendly? Did Ribono Shel Olam feel at home in my home? Did I bring him into my home? Or at the end of the day, was I only worried about God outside the home, but inside the home, I did what I wanted? Now we understand. So therefore, again, what's the message over here? David HaMelech is saying, Ribono Shel Olam, you know, I never got to build the actual Beis HaMikdash. And we've spoken about before how much David HaMelech wanted to build the Beis HaMikdash. I never got to actually build it. But even though I never got to build a physical structure, I lived the life of a Beis HaMikdash. Because David HaMelech said, Ribono Shel Olam, I brought you into every aspect of my life. Even when I was sick, even when I was close to death, I always had you with me. I brought you, God, into my home. I brought you, God, into my life. And as such, even though I was never able to build the actual Beis HaMikdash, to a certain degree, you know, the Bilvavi Mishkan Evne, I built the Beis HaMikdash in my heart. I built the Beis HaMikdash in my home because I brought you into every single part of my life. Even when I suffered, even when I was ill, even when I was having difficulty, you were always a part of my existence. This is an incredible insight. Says Rav Hirsch, this is the meaning of the capital. Mizmor Shir Chanukah Sabayis LaDavid. David instructs Shlomo, this is the song I want you to build. You know, it's one of the great dangers of the Beis HaMikdash. One of the great dangers is that people would think that the Beis HaMikdash was an ends. The goal is to build the Beis HaMikdash. Understand, the Beis HaMikdash is not an ends. There's only one ends in Judaism. Me, you, we are the ends. Everything else that we have in life is a means to elevate this ends, is a mean to elevate me. The goal ultimately of the Beis HaMikdash is not, okay, show up, come three times a year, it's beautiful, we all get to go to Yerushalayim, it's fantastic, that is of course wonderful. That's not the goal. The goal is that when I go to the Beis HaMikdash again, I'm inspired that just as God was brought into this home, I have to figure out how to bring God into my home, into my life. So David HaMelech commands Shlomo, on the day when you dedicate the Beis HaMikdash, sing this song, because this song captures the essence of the Beis HaMikdash. Bring God into your life. Bring God into your home. Make the Ribono Shel Olam a part and a fixture of the walls of your home, of the framework of your home, into every single life circumstance. And now begin to understand the connection to Hanukkah. You know, Hanukkah is a fascinating, it's interesting. I'd say the single most asked question I got this year about Hanukkah, still getting, is because just the way Hanukkah is falling out between December 25th and January 1st, so a lot of people are traveling. A lot of people are traveling. So what's the question that comes up most when people are traveling, right? Where do I light? I'm going to be on a plane to Eretz Yisrael. What do I do? So what's the halacha if you're on a plane to Eretz Yisrael one of the nights of Hanukkah? So don't light on the plane, right? That's a good idea. It's a good idea. But in addition to that, the halacha is, so if there's someone home, they can light on your behalf. If you're traveling with your family, there's no one in your home, you are pater. You do not have to go ahead and light Ner Chanukah, which is fascinating. Why? Because Ner Chanukah, the mitzvah of Chanukah, the mitzvah of light kindling the menorah, is a fascinating mitzvah. It is not an obligation upon the individual. It is an obligation upon the bayis. It is an obligation upon the home. That's why, interestingly enough, it's also one of the mitzvos where a woman could exempt the entire family. Let's say, again, a husband is not home, a man is not home, or no one else is home, and the woman of the home is home. She could light the menorah in the household and discharge the obligation for the household. Why? Because the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, the way the Gemara frames it, is Ner Ish Ubeiso. It is a mitzvah on the home, not a mitzvah on the individual. Therefore, if I'm traveling and I don't have a home that night per se, then I don't have a mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. It's Ner Ish Ubeiso. What is the message of Chanukah? What's the message of Chanukah? The message of Chanukah is, you see, Chanukah is a fascinating Yom Tov, because at the end of the day, it celebrated a rededication of the Beis HaMikdash. But it also, Chanukah itself, which is, we'll talk about this more next week, which although Chanukah is the rededication of the second Beis HaMikdash, Chanukah in many respects was also the beginning of the last chapter of Jewish autonomy in Eretz Yisrael, in many different ways, which we'll discuss more. The mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, when we celebrate the rededication of the Beis HaMikdash, what a strange thing. I'm celebrating the rededication of the Beis HaMikdash in my own home. What a strange concept, right? Beis HaMikdash is the Beis HaMikdash. We don't, generally, when we celebrate miracles, we celebrate miracles that happen to us as individuals. We don't generally celebrate miracles that are attached to the Beis HaMikdash, right? Think about this just a moment. There are many miracles that occurred in the Beis HaMikdash, right? The Mishnah Avos says there were 10 miracles that occurred all the time in the Beis HaMikdash. We don't remember any of them. We don't remember. But yet, Ner Chanukah, which is a miracle that occurred in the temple, we reenact that in our homes. Why? Why? Because what's the message? The message with the rededication of the Beis HaMikdash was not just the rededication of the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, but it's the rededication of the Beis HaMikdash because wherever we live is a Beis HaMikdash. Wherever I live is a temple. Wherever I live has to be rededicated. Wherever my home is, that is the place that has to become infused with Kiddusha, infused with holiness, just like the Beis HaMikdash. That is the message of the menorah. Such a strange idea. You know, in general, we are very careful not to recreate anything from the Beis HaMikdash outside of the Beis HaMikdash. So for example, in our shuls, we try to stay away from having stone floors. Why? Because the Beis HaMikdash had stone floors. That's why many times, right, those who bow, let's say a Yom Noran by Aleinu, right? Even if the floor is carpeted, we're careful sometimes to go ahead and put it. We do anything and everything not to pretend like we're recreating anything outside of the Beis HaMikdash. So again, by menorah, we run into this problem also. Because the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash had how many stalks? Is that the right word? Right? Seven. Right, so we can't go ahead yet. So we make a menorah of eight. We don't make a menorah of seven. Also remembering the miracle of the Pach Shemen. So interesting. We normally stay away from that in every way. What are we doing? When we light the menorah, what we are doing is each of us is the Kohen Gadol, each of us is the high priest in our home, saying, my home is a Beis HaMikdash. My home is a temple. It's not just my shul that's a mikdash ma'at. My home, bless you, my home is a temple. And therefore, because my home is a temple, I have to figure out ultimately how to draw the Shekhinah. How do I draw God's divine presence into my home? That is the job. That is the mandate of a Jewish home. And now we understand why we read this kapitel on Chanukah. Because it's in this kapitel where David HaMelech teaches us the lesson that the Beis HaMikdash is not an ends. The Beis HaMikdash is a means to teach us how to draw God into our homes, into our lives. And therefore, we kindle the menorah, we reenact an avoda in the Beis HaMikdash in order to go ahead and bring home this very idea. How do I ignite the light of spirituality into my home? And this becomes perhaps one of the most important aspects of our Judaism. What goes on in our homes? What influences do we allow in our homes? What do we allow? What do we allow over that threshold? You know, it's very important that before a person allows anything into their home, a person has to think to themselves, is this influence going to allow God's presence to be more acutely felt or less acutely felt if I bring this in, if I allow this in, if I say this thing, if I talk in this way, if we engage in this activity? It's an incredible and overwhelming mandate, because again, home is often where you like to go to let your guard down a little bit, right? You want to close the door, and I just want to be me. Well, guess what? No one said being Jewish is easy, but it's an exceptional privilege, because we have the beautiful opportunity not just to have a nice house. I have the ability to convert my home into a Beis HaMikdash. But that comes with an... That's why, again, for example, there's a beautiful Gemara. I should have included this on the sheet as well. The Gemara says something... I think we spoke about this before a couple of weeks. The Gemara says, Shulchano shel Adam mechaper. In the absence of a Mizbeach, in the absence of a temple which had an altar, Shulchano shel Adam mechaper, a person's table, has the ability to atone like the Mizbeach. How does a person's table atone ultimately? How does a person's table provide for atonement? Hachnasas Archim, right? Hospitality. Opening my home to other people. And as we spoke about in the past, doesn't mean your friends. I mean, it's nice to invite your friends. That's great. But your friends already know that you like them. Your friends already have a relationship with you. Opening our homes to people who perhaps are a little bit more on the periphery. Opening our homes to perhaps those people who are not as socially connected. Opening our homes to perhaps those people who are encountering different life challenges. That's ultimately, again, how my table provides atonement. So I have my menorah. I have my table, which is the mizbeach. And there's a lot more to speak on this topic. All different parts of the home represent different parts of the Beis HaMikdash. But that's the message of Chanukah, or one of the messages of Chanukah, to go ahead and to figure out how to, on that Yom Tov, when we celebrate the rededication of the Beis HaMikdash, is when we celebrate the rededication of our homes as a Beis HaMikdash as well. How and what do I need to do in order to ignite the flame of spirituality in my home? What do I need to do in order to allow God to feel comfortable in my home? What has to be done? What has to be tweaked? What has to be improved? What has to be elevated in order to ensure that the Shekhinah, the divine presence itself, always feels comfortable in my home? That's the connection between this kapitel ultimately and Chanukah. But let me share with you one last piece, and with this we'll conclude. Rashi HaKadosh says, actually, if you skip down a little bit to the Eben Ezra number 7. So Eben Ezra writes, Mizmor Chanukah Salaisi Shomrim, Shetziva David Sheyin Gavu Amashorim, Ze Mizmor Bechanukah Salaisi Rishon. So the Eben Ezra and Rashi both understand that really the essence of this kapitel, the Eben Ezra goes on to a lot more, but we're not going to discuss it now. The real essence of this kapitel is to give us a window into King David's incredible yearning to build the Beis HaMikdash. David HaMelech, you know, many of us in life have desires to do certain things, certain aspirations, certain goals, certain dreams. But many times, if I'm told that it's simply not attainable, right? I want to do X, but and X is just not attainable. It's not within my reach. So I might be disappointed for a certain amount of time, but then usually what happens? I move on, right? Okay, got it. And by the way, that's not a bad thing. At a certain point in time, if there are certain things that are, for whatever reason, not within reach, it's not a good idea to obsess over it. A person does have to learn to move on. The incredible aspect of David HaMelech was that there was such a burning desire to build the Beis HaMikdash that even when he was told that he couldn't, he said, fine, if I can't build it, I'm going to try to do anything and everything else I can that is related to it. So, for example, remember again, what does David HaMelech do first thing? He purchases the land. Remember again, he purchases what would later on be called Harabais. It's amazing to think there was a guy by the name of Aravna. Aravna was a Gentile, a Jebusite, a Yevusi, who was living, you can imagine, who was living on the Harabais. Right? He had a threshing floor there. He just had his house there, a very nice farm there. That was the Harabais. David HaMelech purchases it from him. We've spoken about this before, you can imagine. Right? Puts up the gate, right? Puts in the sign, here is the future site of the temple of God. And again, he can't touch it, he can't lay the foundation, he can't begin to dig, David HaMelech is forbidden to do anything with the physical structure, but yet again, he'll purchase the site. What else does he do? He composes music. Remember again, almost all of Sefer Tehillim was written by David HaMelech to be sung by the Levitic choir in the Beis HaMikdash. David HaMelech wrote the music for the Beis HaMikdash. So if I can't build it, I'm going to do anything and everything I can that is within my power to go ahead and somehow connect to it. This was the greatness of David HaMelech. So take a look at number 8. I want to share with you a beautiful insight from the Be'er HaChaim, if you have to turn the page. So he says the Be'er HaChaim is the Lulav Rebbe. So he says something amazing. He says, V'kol shekein b'ner Chanukah. What is the essence of their Chanukah? So really, in essence, the real message of this kapitel, chapter 30, is the power of yearning. Power of yearning. David HaMelech is teaching us the power of yearning for something. Wanting something badly. Paragraph Aleph. V'kol shekein b'ner Chanukah. She'ikra nikva lahadik misoch hisoros aleif. We know when it comes to Ner Chanukah, and we'll talk about this more next week, it is so important that there's a Hisorus, that there's a spiritual awakening for this Avodah. Sharei kol ha'neis de Chanukah, kavu zecha l'neiros ha'menorah. If you skip down a little bit, so remember again, we know, and again, we'll discuss this more next week as well, Chanukah is hyper-focused on the candles, on the miracle of the crucible, the Pach Shemen, almost to the exclusion of the military victory. The military victory is mentioned in passing, in davening, but there's no real other part of Chanukah that relates to the military victory. Everything is about the Pach Shemen. Skip down to paragraph Beis. V'amar Rav HaKadosh Baal HaBeis Avraham Islanim, Z'chus Yagenu L'B'Shem Rav HaKadosh Rav Levi Yitzhak Mibar Deshev, Da'al Pia MS, We spoke about this before. Understand, in reality, when the Chashmonaim come back into the Beis HaMikdash and they find that all of the oil has been defiled, right? There's only one little cruse of oil with the seal of the Kohen Gadol. If they ask the Shaila about what should we do, what would the Pesach, what halachic ruling would they have received? You're exempt. There's a concept in halacha called Onis Rachmana Patre. If you are suffering or if you are in the midst of extenuating circumstances, remember, Torah in general, right, the mantra of Judaism, is Derachah Darchei Noam. The ways of the Torah are pleasant, which is important because in general what that means is if there is something unpleasant in your Judaism, chances are you're doing it wrong. Torah is beautiful. Mitzvos are beautiful. Relation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is beautiful. So therefore, again, we have a halachic concept that if you have ridiculous circumstances, extraneous circumstances, you are exempt. So you walk into the Beis HaMikdash, there is no pure oil. Okay, Nebuch, you're exempt. There is no mitzvah to kindle the menorah. Look what he says. V'rak biglal shera Kodesh Baruch Hu ech nichsifa v'gam kalsa nafsham shal Yisrael lahadlik neros ha-menor b'tara. But God saw how badly they yearned to kindle the menorah. Al kein asa lahem neis ha-neros. This is amazing. Why did the miracle of the Pach Shemen occur? So Rabbi Yitzchak Berditchev, the Islamic Rebbe, suggests because God saw how badly the Chashmonaim wanted to get, they needed to kindle that menorah. They needed to go ahead and rekindle the light of Yiddishkeit. To understand, there was mass assimilation. You know, we don't talk about this part of the story, but you know, the Gemara says that after the miracle of the Pach Shemen, the wording of the Gemara is Lashana Acheres. In a subsequent year, they established Chanukah as a Yom Tov. And the Sasam is the Gerebe comments, they did not make Chanukah as a Yom Tov until some number of years later on. Why? Because there was such rampant assimilation that to declare a new Yom Tov when the ranks of the Jewish people were so badly depleted would have been a joke. They had to rebolster. They had to reignite the flame. So the Chashalim come in, and what do they want to do more than anything? They wanted to kindle that menorah, because that menorah symbolized light. Light symbolizes the neshama. Light symbolizes God. Light symbolizes Torah. That light symbolized a resurgence and a renewal of Jewish life. They needed to go ahead and kindle that menorah, but they couldn't. But they couldn't. There was no oil. The Ribono Shel Olam saw what they yearned for, saw what they wanted, and said, you know what? If you're going to yearn so badly for this, then I'm going to help you make it happen. And that's where the miracle of the Pach Shemen occurred. Lachin Kavu. He says, Lachin kavu l'doro zecha l'neizeh. Therefore, this miracle becomes the centerpiece of Chanukah. Why? Kedei legalus ulefarsin kama chaviva midas hashtokukus va'alef ne'amakum. To teach us one important lesson. You know what the major lesson of Chanukah is? The major lesson? The major lesson is the power of yearning. The power of yearning. Hashtokukus. The power of yearning for something higher. The power of yearning for something more meaningful. The power of yearning for something holier. When you yearn for the right things, the Ribono Shel Olam sees what it is that you are yearning for and helps you along that path. That was the real miracle of Chanukah. Our ancestors walk into the Beis HaMikdash, and all they wanted was to be able to kindle that menorah. That's all they wanted. Because they recognize if they could just kindle that menorah, the message that sent that we're here, the message that we sent that Netzach Yisrael Lo Yishaker, Klal Yisrael will never disappear, the ability to rebound, the ability to rebuild, was all contained in the ability to light that menorah. But they couldn't. But they yearned, so that Kadosh Baruch Hu says, you yearn for it? I'll help you with it. You really want it? I'll help you with it. He goes on, he says, V'zemamshich v'gorim l'nei she'israch ish emar me'ata, she'ikr ha'mitzvah, he'zecher li'shtokakos sh'aysa l'bnei Yisrael b'yam ha'hem ha'zman hazeh. Va'al kein, alinu nami l'kaim ha'adlaka ba'ofen zeh. Says the Sanhedrin Rebbe something amazing. You know what the real essence of Chanukah is? The real essence of Chanukah is to get us to ask a very simple question. What do we yearn for? What do we yearn for? Right? If the genie came out of the bottle and granted you one wish, what would that one wish be? Not three. Right? One. What is at the top of your pyramid? What do you yearn for more than anything in life? So, good. Baruch Hashem. Wonderful. Halavai. Halavai. So that's the message of Chanukah. It was a rhetorical question, but you're good. Right, so what do you yearn for more than anything in life? That's the message of Chanukah. The reason we have a Chanukah is because a group of brave men, and interesting, they were anomalies. We'll talk about them more. I know I'm putting them off for next week. But again, the Chashmonaim were a great, the Chashmonaim were Kohanim. They were Kohanim. They were not the normal fighting force. Yet, again, what, but I'll tell you something amazing. This is just an aside. So why is it that the Kohanim always become the warriors? Right? Isn't it amazing? We see this by the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash as well. Do you know who held the Romans? Right? We know, again, it took the Romans 3 weeks to get from the outer walls of the Beis HaMikdash, outer walls of the Old City, to the Beis HaMikdash, right? So we know where the outer walls of the Beis HaMikdash are, right? When you walk in, when you go into the city, those are the outer walls of the Beis HaMikdash. So 3 weeks to get from there to the Har HaBayis, right? Takes you 8 minutes to walk it, 10 minutes to walk it. Why did it take, you know who fought them tooth and nail? The Kohanim. The Kohanim fought them tooth and nail. You know why it's always the Kohanim who come through? Because the Kohanims are always the one who yearn for that relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Kohanim are always the ones who yearn for Kedusha. The Kohanim are always the ones who yearn for something higher, something bigger, something better, something holier. And so when the Kohanim come back into the Beis Ribono Shel Olam, all we want is to kindle the menorah. That's all we want. We just want to reignite the light of Torah, the light of Ruach Nius, not just for us, but for Klal Yisrael. Help us do it. Baal Shem says, that's what you yearn for? I'll help you for it. Help you with it. Says the Sanhedrin Rebbe, that's the message of Chanukah. What do we yearn for? What do we want? And by the way, it sometimes is an overwhelming question to ask ourselves. Because sometimes if we ask ourselves, what do we yearn for? We might be a little bit embarrassed as to what the answer is. Because sometimes the things that we yearn for in life aren't necessarily the things that we should be yearning for in life. But the shaila is, what are my priorities? What do I yearn for? What is my hishtokikus for? And now we understand, by the way, why we read this kapitel. Why do we read Mizmor Shir Chanukah Sabayis Adavar and Chanukah? Because what is this kapitel all about? What is it about? It's about yearning. It's about yearning. Rabbanu Sha'olam, all I wanted was to build your Beis HaMikdash. All I wanted was to build your temple. You didn't let me. But God, you are my witness that through difficulty, through sickness, through illness, throughout all of my challenges in life, I did anything and everything to advance that dream. Chapter 30, Mizmor Shir Chanukah Sabayis LaDavid, is the capital ultimately of yearning. It is the capital that the Jew has to say, what do I yearn for in life? What do I want more than anything in life? And by the way, you also know, it's not enough to yearn. Because after you go ahead and you answer the question, what do I yearn for? The next question then becomes what? How do I make it happen? You know, yearning is the first step. But after I decide what is that I yearn for more than anything, then I have to ask myself, what am I doing in life ultimately again to allow that to occur? This, says the Sulaiman Rebbe, is ultimately again the message of Mizmor Shir Chanukah Sabayis LaDavid. What do I yearn for in life? So to bring this all together, we'll save the last page of Mirsa Hashem for next week. But to bring this all together, actually, you know what? Let me share it with you now. No, I'll share it with you next week. Okay, so to bring this all together, it's on the parasha, but okay, but we're out of time, so I'll just bring this all together. So again, in trying to understand ultimately again, what's the connection of this capital to the inauguration of the Beis HaMikdash? What's the connection of this capital to Chanukah? So first of all, in terms of its inauguration to the Beis HaMikdash, this capital gives us a window into the very raw emotion of David HaMelech. Just wanting forgiveness. Or again, I should say differently, just wanting a public sign of forgiveness. Just wanting everyone else to know that he's not a sinner. Just wanting everyone to know that although he made a mistake, he also had the courage to own it, to repair it, and to do tshuva for it. Ribbono Shel Olam telling him, I'm sorry, David, I will give you that sign, but not during your lifetime. That sign will only come when your son Shlomo dedicates the Beis HaMikdash. Daranach, you have to learn the art of patience. But David HaMelech will say, okay, I could find shalom in knowing that something will happen in the future. Even if it's not going to happen during my lifetime, even if I'm not going to get to see it, Mizmor Shir Chanukah Sabayis LaDavid, Shlomo, my son, when you dedicate that temple, sing this song. Because it's only on that day that I will finally be healed from my illness. I'll be finally healed from my sadness. I'll be finally healed from all of my brokenness over the episode of Bathsheba. What's the connection ultimately to Chanukah? So we come out with two different approaches. The approach of Rav Hirsch and the approach of the Lulav Rebbe. According to Rav Hirsch, the essence of the Beis HaMikdash is to teach us that just as we can bring God into a Beis HaMikdash, we have to bring God into our lives. The mitzvah of Chanukah is ner ishu beiso. The essence of Chanukah is the pursuit of bringing spirituality into our homes, is making sure that after 120, when the beams and the bricks of my home give testimony about the person I was and the life that I led, that that testimony will be favorable, that my home will be able to attest to the fact that I invited God into every arena and every area of my life. Therefore, Mizmor Shir Chanukah Sabayis LaDavid, where David HaMelech says the goal of the Beis HaMikdash is to bring God into every area, even sickness, even illness, even difficulty. Sing this when you dedicate the Beis HaMikdash. Sing this on Chanukah as well. Because again, Chanukah is the Yom Tov. When we rededicate our homes, ultimately to being places of Kedusha, we rededicate our homes to being a Mikdash Ma'at as well. And finally, the Sulaiman Rebbe teaching us the beautiful idea that the real essence of this capital is yearning. The Ramah teaching us what it means to yearn for something, to have an unquenchable desire and want for something. And even though you know you're never going to get it, nevertheless, that yearning keeps up and you try to figure out to the best of your ability, even if I can't have the thing that I want, how could I go ahead and do as much as possible to bring myself closer to that goal? That's what the Ramah spends. He's like, can't build the Beis HaMikdash, but does anything and everything associated short of building the Beis HaMikdash. To which the Sulaiman Rebbe says, this is the essence of Chanukah. Chanukah is hishtokikus. Remember that word, hishtokakus, yearning. Chanukah is about asking ourselves, what do we yearn for? What do we pine for? What do we desire? And after we identify those hopefully important and beautiful things like that we truly yearn for, then finding the courage to create the action plan to ultimately get to that goal. All right, we'll stop over here. Meretz, next week we'll continue with Chanukah as well.